Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, I was flipping through my Star Trek Mad Libs book, and I was becoming despondent because I didn't think there would be any in here that had to do with Deep Space Nine, and then I flipped to the last page.
Oh,
the
yeah?
The very last page of Star Trek Mad Libs is about Deep Space Nine. Would you like to do that with me?
I would.
One, two.
And you people, you're all some kind of Star Trek.
Mad Lib.
Some kind of Star Trek.
The first thing I need is a person in room.
A person in the room that I'm in?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a weird one. I've been doing Mad Libs my whole life. I don't think I've ever seen that one.
That's a new clue.
Yeah.
Pee Wee Herman.
Noun.
Topo Chico. I'm just doing the thing where I look around the room and pick something.
You're really P-tar griffining?
Yeah.
Adjective.
Silky. I'll let your imagination tell you what I looked at to come up with that one.
Noun.
Tribble.
Adjective.
Foamy.
Noun.
Memory card.
Plural noun.
Nail clippers.
Verb.
Sleep.
Plural noun.
Pencils.
Verb.
Fuck. I'm just going into 8-year old now.
Noun. I think these are better when you go 8-year old, so I'm not against it.
Okay. Butthole.
Adjective.
Swole.
Animal.
Dog.
Verb ending in ing.
They can't just put gerund?
Nope.
Porking.
Adjective.
Licking.
Article of clothing.
Cock ring.
Adjective.
Textured.
Ben, the title of this Mad Lib is A Tour of Deep Space Nine. Being so close to the Pee Wee Herman wormhole and having access to the Gamma Topo Chico brings a lot of silky beings to Deep Space Nine, which is very exciting. It also allows for interstellar tribble and foamy conflict. But life on a space memory card isn't all excitement and nail clippers. Starships come and sleep, and you need to help nearby pencils on a day-to-day basis. Plus, you have to fuck with the Ferengi while dealing with the Founders, who can change buttholes at will. One day, your buddy will be a swole woman.
Sure.
And the next day, a dog.
Mm.
But porking with Captain Sisko and Commander Nerys all the time is totally licking. So, hang on to your cock ring and get ready for the time of your life, textured years, on Deep Space Nine.
Wow. That's interesting that that's the only Deep Space Nine one in that book.
I know.
It's definitely post-season 3 information in there, right?
This is copyright 2016.
Huh.
So,
what the hell?
I don't know. We had been going in order on this, and there are ones about the movies. There are ones about Star Trek Voyager. They kind of bounce around. There's TNG stuff in here.
Yeah.
Only one that I could find that was Deep Space Nine related. So there you go.
Wow. Hey, Adam, I got a package that's addressed to us. Do you think I should open it on air real quick?
One of the rare episodes with two different Marin opens in one.
Yeah, I mean, it's the end of the season, so we could blow it out.
Have at, man. You don't want that food spoiling.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was thinking. It got sent to the MaximumFun.org mothership, and our good buddy Danny Baruela let us know that that he had a priority mailbox for us.
That's appropriate, right?
The fact that it was priority mail is what makes me concerned that there might be something that could spoil in here. Mm. Oh, but I... Now that I see what is within the box, I'm looking at an inner container that says, not for food use. Food consumed from this plate may be harmful. Can you guess what that might be, Adam?
I have a hope and a suspicion that it is a Franklin Mint plate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same like octagonal styrofoam container that my wharf plate lives in.
It's a warrior's plate.
Yeah. I haven't gotten around to ordering the commemorative plate hanging brackets that I need. But now that I have two, I feel like I can't avoid the issue any longer. Do you want to take a guess at who is depicted on the plate before I open it?
The moment I buy those brackets for the wall bin, my marriage is over. So that would be a real suicide by cop situation on my part.
Yeah.
Were I to make such an order.
You have the problem of your recording space is sort of part of the living room or the den or something in your house.
Never so, used to be that way.
Yeah. My recording space is kind of my own studio, mm-hmm. at least in this apartment. So I have free dispensation to decorate it however I want. But you wanna throw out a guess at who's gonna be on this plate when I open it up?
I am going to guess Deep Space Nine era Worf.
Oh wow, interesting guess. There does not appear to be a note of any kind, but the from label says Hubert, last name withheld, and no return address from Hubert. So
that's a combination that's typically threatening.
Yeah. Yeah, Hubert, this could just gas me to death when I open it up. It could be some sort of triggered device.
Well, at least I got that last Mad Libs in before the end.
Oh, man, Adam, it is a red shirt, but it is not Deep Space Nine Worf. It is Commander Riker William T.
Hey.
On this plate. And I would say that they have even exaggerated the squareness of Commander Riker's jaw a little bit in this painting. He's looking extra hunky on this commemorative plate.
Definitely don't want to besmirch the fine people working at the Franklin Mint. However, their caricatures of some of our favorite characters have missed a couple of times. I'm speaking specifically of eyeliner Captain Picard.
Oh, yeah.
But also, it looks like Lantern Jaw Commander Riker. Can you shoot me a pic of that? Can you Jackie and Laurie me that plate?
Yeah.
Of course. Jackie and Laurieing refers to another show on the Maximum Fun Network featuring Jackie Cation and Laurie Kilmartin, where they often talk shit about other comedians and write the name on a piece of paper and pass it back and forth between each other so that they don't have to reveal precisely about whom they are talking shit to the listening audience.
Yeah, and in this case, you're just talking shit about a plate.
Yeah, and in this case, it's the Franklin Mint that I'm really talking shit about.
I don't hate the Franklin Mint. I hate what they made Commander Riker become. Wow, he's sticking that chest out.
Yeah. This is plate number 3763B from the Hamilton collection. And there's a certificate of authenticity here, signed by James P. Smith Jr., chairman, the Hamilton collection.
It has zero value without that certificate of authenticity, Ben. I'm really glad you have that part.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Hubert, or whoever you are, if that is your real name.
Last name withheld?
Yeah. Yeah, which is a Flophouse thing, to speak of another Maximum Fun podcast.
Boy, really spreading it around here.
Yeah.
Just filling our show with ads, Ben.
You're always jealously guarding our show from mentions of anything else.
Just mentions of better shows is what I defend against mostly.
hard to think of a show that isn't better than this, Adam.
Yeah, that's true. And hard to imagine a show that's better than a season finale on a Star Trek series. And that's what we're here today to talk about. It's the season finale of season 4 of Deep Space Nine, and it's called Broken Link.
Do you realize how incredible this is?
No, of course you don't.
So the opening scene is Odo
and Mr. Bunkus
being summoned to Garrick's tailoring shop. And Garrick has kind of positioned himself as a matchmaker in this scene.
Security Chief Odo, I'd like to introduce you to Shallan Arroyo, one of my best customers.
Odo initially thinks that this is like some kind of security issue, but it's not. Garrick's looking to set Odo up with a lovely Bajoran woman.
A lovely Bajoran woman who is all up on Odo's dock. Like, she is not subtle at all.
No, she's heard that he can change the size and shape of his dong, and she wants at it.
And she is the owner of a new Bajoran restaurant on the promenade, and she is wondering why Odo does nothing but walk by on patrols and does not come and partake of her ample buffet.
She's the restaurateur, but it is Garrick who is serving the snacks today.
She's laying it on real thick. It makes me wonder how adorned her food is in her restaurant, if it's especially sauce heavy.
Oh, you think she might over garnish her dishes?
I do get that feeling.
Hmm.
Boy, she is like one half step back from obnoxiously flirty. She is instead just very aggressively flirty.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a way that could be perceived as science fiction to some people.
I have certainly never had a woman come on this strong.
Yeah.
But Odo, bit of a snack himself, so who knows?
Would you trust Garrick to set you up? I think I might.
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, like, he's very untrustworthy in many things, but I don't feel like he would. He's untrustworthy in the areas of love.
He has deep knowledge of basically everyone on the station, you'd have to assume. And
he's done an extensive background check. She's undergone extreme vetting.
I kind of feel that way, and I think this is one of the reasons why Garrick chastises Odo so much for blowing it with her, because clearly Garrick had put a lot of time and thought into this match, and Odo just like he's like the kid you're like trying to play catch with, and you like underhand toss the ball at them and it hits them in the chest and falls down, and then their reaction time like claps their hands together.
Yeah, he's lolled this ball.
Yeah, he's totally done that. Not good, Odo.
She walks out and Odo does not make a date with her, does not close the deal in a way that really pisses Garrick off.
You should be locked away for that.
But they don't have much time to talk about this because Odo is suddenly overcome with a fit of goop. And he collapses on the floor, and Garrick actually comes and uses Odo's comm badge to radio to Bashir that there's a medical emergency.
Garrick goes over to the wall and his AED and like puts the paddles into the goo. It's not working! Yeah, it's a goo into show open for Deep Space Nine.
Sure is.
Not looking good.
And so we get Odo in the six bay on the bio bed, and at this point he's looking pretty standard. He's not super drippy yet.
Yeah, because we know by now there is a stages of Odo situation with him that we've seen before.
Yeah, and that can kind of go two different directions, right? It can go like kind of shaggy direction.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Where he looks like a no-need bread dough before it's risen overnight.
Uh-huh.
Or it can go in the like super drippy direction, which is the aesthetic choice that they went with for this episode.
There is a direction that they don't even get close to in this episode, which is Odo is only hurting throughout this episode, but he is never a danger to the station or anyone else as his body starts to fail.
Oh, you're thinking like he could like get liquidy and like melt into the floor and start corroding some of the systems?
Or like accidentally he gets really big and throws Bashir across the room, like...
Oh, yeah.
He's predictably deteriorating.
Right.
And not unpredictably deteriorating.
Yeah, the dialogue and the visuals felt a little unsynced because Bashir keeps saying like, oh, your density and your molecular structure are swinging wildly.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly Odo is just getting goopier and goopier and occasionally having gold, you know, appear on the surface of his body.
Hey, Mikey, go to the bathroom.
It would be great if his density were changing to such a degree that, like, he was attractive to objects in the room. Like, suddenly pieces of metal are, like, slapping against him and, like, stuff's going into orbit around his face.
Yeah. There's kind of two theories, right? It's either Odo is sick or this is some phase of changeling life that they are not aware of, and puberty and menopause are tossed out as potential points of comparison.
He's going through changes. Lots of changes.
Like my mother.
Which I thought was fun.
Either way, though, Odo has to remain in the infirmary so that Bashir can diagnose this.
Also, some Gowron news, Adam. They're watching, they're having like a McLaughlin group.
Issue one!
Up in the wardroom. And Gowron is threatening war over a sector called the Arcanus Sector. He wants to put the anus back in Arcanus.
This really felt to me like a Gowron tweeted situation, you know? Because it's very one-directional. This is a recording. This is not a conversation.
Yeah, this is Sisko quote tweeting it and saying, "This is not normal."
Yeah, he's watching this message with Worf, Dax, and Kira, and what Gowron is saying is that he's demanding this territory, as you've said, and demanding withdrawals from that territory in order to claim it. War is sort of inevitable at this point. This guy's making demands that the Federation can't possibly capitulate to.
Right. The demands are, like, fairly outrageous. Like, the Arcanus Sector is something that the Klingons ceded to whoever's there now. Over 100 years ago, it's settled law, and suddenly he's moving it back onto the board as a thing that's potentially under threat.
Gowron wrongly assumes that just because he's had Arcanus one time, that it's on the table every time.
And
the thing that Gowron needs to know is you need to ask and prepare every time.
Yeah, the Arcanus is something that can be fun for everybody involved, but it takes a little bit of advance warning for the Arcanus part of that equation.
Yeah.
I really liked the shot of Kira, Dax, and Worf in this scene. It's kind of, I think it's a tilt shift lens that they shot it on, because they're sort of at an angle to the plane of the camera, but they're all three in focus.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
It's either a triple diopter or the lens is actually tilted so that they can all three be in focus, but it's really cool looking.
Yeah, because they're talking about this Gowron situation, but they're also talking about Odo. And this scene, the way that it's blocked, as you've described, and also by virtue of its dialogue, feels super quippy and sharp to me in a way that really stuck out. Like, it's not just dialogue between two people or even three people. Like, they're really hitting the ball back and forth. All four of them are.
Was Dax's last host as argumentative as this one?
Worse.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Yeah, like the topics of conversation in the scene are like a very close friend and colleague of ours is mysteriously ill and our civilization is about to go to war. But the tone is super jokey.
It feels friends quippy.
Yeah.
Worf is really the Chandler of this scene.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that makes Kira the Rachel?
Yeah, she's the Rachel.
Is Dax the Phoebe? Or is he the Monica?
Oh, Dax is the Monica.
Okay.
Sisko's definitely Ross.
Oh, for sure. it is a bit also like a Gowron tweeted situation where it's like if we all capitulate our mood to how fucked up this is, we'll all be in a terrible mood all the time.
Right. Let's discuss anything else but this.
Right.
The argument, to the extent that it could be called one, is how much care to give a friend while they're hurting. Like, they know Odo's in the infirmary. They all seem to agree that Odo doesn't want company, but Kira doesn't prescribe to this, because when we cut to the infirmary after the scene, Kira has visited Odo, but instead of a small gift shop teddy bear or like a mug of flowers or whatever, she brings what Odo wants most, which is a criminal activities report on a pad.
Yeah, I feel like if I was in the hospital, having an iPad would be really great. Just, you know, kind of feel connected to the world.
Yeah, they're not going to have those in the hospital gift shop, though, I bet.
Yeah. You know, he's been told that moving around is something that could potentially exacerbate his condition.
Yeah.
And He swiftly ignores that advice, the advice to stay bedridden, because he's like down in some cargo bay catching a purple-haired lady who's pulled some kind of diamond heist.
Did you recognize her? This is Renage. This is the Bozlik lady who gave Quark Lee Nallis's earring, like, last season.
Yeah,
Same lady.
She looked familiar, but I couldn't place it.
When I watch Renee Abergenois walk around in this state, the thing that came to mind was, have you ever had to get out of a pool and then put on jeans, for example? Like, when you're wet and you're wearing dry clothes, there's a way that you walk that is, like, very uncomfortable. And Odo is that. Odo is wet, and he's wearing clothes. They're not really clothes, but you know what I mean? Like, that's sort of the read I get on his acting, his physical acting, and I think it's great.
That's a strong choice on his part.
So
he turns into a puddle, and we smash cut to him in Six Bay, and he is in much worse shape. He's way wetter. He's way goopier.
He's got some real grumble guts, right?
Yeah. He's covered with a blanket that I wondered initially if that was him or not, because we've seen him turn part of himself into a blanket before.
Great question.
But then he pulls it back and reveals that that his belly is all golden right now. And Bashir licks his lips but manages to suppress his desire to get a big lick.
Odo has exposed basically a Civil War battlefield injury to his chest, and it's not a gross out.
Yeah, people are not, maybe that's just Bashir's professionalism.
Here's the thing. It's clear Odo is having trouble holding it together. Shouldn't Bashir be providing a bucket or a bedpan for him? Like, wouldn't Odo be more comfortable if he were in a liquid state than, like, white-knuckling himself into being a solid for the time that he is?
I wondered that. Could Odo, like, be mostly goo, but just have his head pop out of the bucket from time to time?
That would be great.
How you doing there, Odo? I'm doing okay.
Just a head in a bedpan.
Yeah, with an iPad floating in it.
Yeah.
The suggestion is raised by Bashir that they go to Bajor so that Odo can work with Dr. Mora on this problem. But Odo kicks that idea right out of bed and also is not interested in going to Starfleet Medical.
And then under his breath, Bashir's like, or like option three, you could go to the Golden Lake with the Founders. Odo's like, what was that third one? That actually sounds pretty great.
And Bashir's like, I could beam down with you.
Golden Lake, you say? An entire lake that's gold.
Yeah.
Delicious.
So the plan is that they're going to go to the G-Quad and see if they can't find them some Founders to get Odo in touch with. And this is a defiant mission. It's a defiant mission that Kira is not going to be going on. It's all but stated that she's being left behind because she's pregnant, right?
That is the subtext.
I thought that there could be like an interesting C storyline in this that they didn't avail themselves of, which is Kira is in the military and does dangerous shit from time to time, and it is partly because of that she is carrying Miles and Keiko's baby. But does that mean, like, the requirements that the Bajoran militia have of her are going to change while she's pregnant? Like, is there a negotiation to be had between her and Miles and Keiko about what the expectations are?
Well, that's exactly where my head went. Like, you get a bunch of O'Brien in this episode where he's just shooting the shit on the bridge, but what if those scenes were instead some antipathy that O'Brien feels towards Kira about her even being there?
Right. But so they don't do anything with that, and instead Kira gets left behind, left in command of the station, and all the Starfleets pile into the Defiant and are waiting for Odo to show up. When Garrick requests to come aboard
Right, Garrick wants to go on this mission so that he can figure out whether or not there are Cardassian survivors from the attack on the Dominion early on. And Sisko in this moment needs to come up with a reason for him to stay that is not that.
Right.
And in the moment, Sisko's idea is that, well, maybe you can just be bedside Garrick with Odo for the duration of the mission. And this is, these are terms that Garrick agrees to.
We share the same priorities, Captain.
I liked the couple of security guys in the room when Sisko makes this arrangement with Garrick. Garrick is suggesting that they add some scarves to their Starfleet uniforms, which, you know, Starfleet people are not into conspicuous consumption or displays of wealth like that, you know? He should know that. Garrick's utility is basically to be the newsprint Sudoku book for Odo during the voyage.
Right. And like we were questioning before about there not being a bucket or a bedpan for Odo, they goop walk Odo from the infirmary to the little D.
Yeah. Anybody who's taken a walk of slime before knows how this feels.
Yeah. But, you know, the tone of this moment is meant to be significant. He pulls down the front of his tunic, he stands up straight, and he does the walk. Like, this is meant to be a powerful moment for this character. And I think it's effective.
Yeah.
It made me feel something for him.
It made me feel bad that they weren't going, like, telling everybody to clear out. You know, he's, like, walking down the promenade, and there's a lot of extras standing just kind of gawking at him.
Yeah.
That's not really what he wants, you know? Like, and no, like, it's Kira and Bashir walking with him, and neither of them is like, hey, guys, come on, give him some room, like, nothing to see here.
Right.
Just a goopy man walking to a spaceship.
This is how I look now, okay? I'm trying something different.
Have you ever had a haircut that didn't quite flatter your face?
You've been telling me for years I should try something new. Well, here it is.
Ta-da! One little scene with Quark where they kind of make a gentleman's agreement that Quark should not go totally crime sick while Odo is gone.
It's a nice little moment where Quark gloats about the many opportunities he's going to have to do crime while Odo's away as cover for how badly he wants Odo to recover and return.
Yeah, they express their love to each other through their professionalism.
Right, yeah. So the little D disembarks and heads through the wormhole, and we get like passage of time cross-cutting, you know, like we get some laughs on the little D bridge.
Yeah.
We get Garrick keeping Odo company with his tales of spycraft.
Maybe assassinating some important Romulan.
It's weird to do this sequence because so little happens in these three scenes. Like we end on O'Brien describing like the weird paranoia he feels about living with Keiko and Kira.
Yeah.
And like conversations that they may be having.
Right. A perfect opportunity for that C storyline that would have been very meaningful to a lot of people, I think.
What it does is sort of serve the weight that the ship has to do because they've gone into the G-Quad without their cloak up. They're sort of wandering in the bad part of town, like driving a nice automobile and like wearing a suit, like to sort of waiting. And it isn't long before a swarm of Jem'Hadar ticks appears.
Yeah, like a dozen ticks come out of nowhere. And kind of before they have even arranged anything over Hales, Change Leader and a bunch of Jem'Hadar just appear on the bridge.
I've come for Odo.
And it's such a confidence from her and the Jem'Hadar to beam aboard right as Sisko and gang are like impotently trying to figure out, well, how are we going to greet them? Are we going to go over there? Are we going to meet them in the transporter room? Like, it's a nice fuck you that Change Leader and the Jem'Hadar do here.
That one guy almost pulls O'Brien's heart out of his chest.
Yeah, that really looks like it hurt.
Yeah.
Was he grabbing onto Colomini's chest hair?
Oh, yeah, he's getting him by the short and curlies.
I don't know what that's like. If that Jem'Hadar grabbed me in the chest, he'd just be grabbing skin.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have anything to grab. You have no dough on your sternum.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be like grabbing a sourdough start.
What are you doing now?
Exactly.
I felt like it was noteworthy that the Jem'Hadar with Change Leader are not predicting what she wants. You know, like they are still just like, you know, raising their gun at everybody and like...
Well, they're never going to get a promotion like that then.
Right. But like, you would think that they would be sort of like the honor guard and they would be like especially good at kind of anticipating what she wants them to be doing at any given moment.
That's super interesting because Change Leader being the most important or significant founder would indicate that her guard would be the best. And these guys are just as doofy as any of the others.
They're standard issue Jem'Hadar.
Yeah. It'd be funny if she were just complaining about the help all the time. And there are a few scenes where she like has to correct those around her.
Yeah, she's constantly telling them to put their rifles down and you know, draw down.
Yeah.
But she goes down to see Odo. And she gives him a handshake that brings him back to about 80%, I would say.
He feels better but not cured, and that's crucial.
He's not drippy, but he's still wet.
Yeah, so they sort of clear the room at this point. They need to have a private moment.
I thought it was really fucked up that she turned to her Jem'Hadar and said, "This is not for your ears." Like, that is just a really cruel choice of words for a Jem'Hadar, right?
I mean, ooh.
Like, you genetically designed me. There's nothing I can do about this, Change Leader. Come on.
Everyone leaves, and that means that Change Leader can start ripping on Odo for the Kira Shakar relationship again, which is something that Change Leader always brings up.
We still take an active interest in your well-being.
She knows Odo's secret, and at every turn they have made Odo vulnerable to them, and
it's a lot like the power move of beaming straight to the bridge. This is a demonstration of how much she is capable of knowing about Odo at any given time.
Yeah.
And by coming right out with his deepest secret again.
Yeah. Remember how we know that?
Kind of hurts.
Yeah.
She's pissed at Odo for killing a changeling. Like, it doesn't take long to get there in the conversation. And it's because we know from before that no changeling has harmed another before Odo did. And so it kind of puts Odo in a unique circumstance. Change Leader has had to go back to the Golden Pool and figure out a way to adjudicate this.
Yeah.
Like, there's no path to prosecution here. They needed to come up with something on the spot.
The changeling system of jurisprudence has no law to fit his crime.
Right. And so she is proposing that Odo come back to the founder's homeworld, the new founder's homeworld, and stand trial. To not do that would mean Odo will die.
So here's the thing, Adam. The whole premise of this is that this sickness is sort of changeling for you're under arrest.
Yeah.
It is forcing him to return to the Golden Lake. But it also kind of undercuts the whole premise of this thing. Because, like, if no changeling has ever done harm to another changeling and he defies their wish for him to come back, then they have done harm to him. And their crime is just as bad as his. I would say that they've done harm to him just by making him sick. So what the fuck are we talking about?
I think you fail to see the hypocrisy of this proposal, Change Leader.
It's like a certain type of political leader doesn't care about hypocrisy, you know?
Right. And so there is no choice for Odo. He accepts these terms.
Yeah, and it's sort of Jem'Hadar motorcade with the little D as limo headed to the new changeling homeworld, which I guess they had to move houses when their address got out on the internet.
This is really irritating to Dax, who is made to leave the helm.
You'll be informed when we reach our destination.
Yeah, and they're like scrambling the navigation computer so that it won't be able to find the planet again.
It's like when someone borrows your car and changes all the radio stations. It's super annoying.
Oh, come on. You reprogrammed my seat settings? Give me a fucking break.
After this moment between Change Leader and Odo, Garrett confronts Change Leader in the hallway outside the infirmary, and the conversation does not go well, Garrick.
Yeah, yeah.
It is rough, because Garrick innocently asks a question about the aftermath of this battle, and he's like, look,
I'd like to learn if there are any survivors after our attack on your homeland.
And Change Leader is like,
they're dead. You're dead. Cardassia is dead.
Not only are there no survivors, I'm looking at a dead fucking phone right now. Like, she goes so dark and basically just obliterates Garrick in that hallway. Like, I'm going to genocide your entire people for that. Ask a dumb fucking question again, Garrick. I dare you.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
It's like Garrick engaged in the logical fallacy that it does not hurt to ask. Ooh. Boy, does it hurt to ask.
Yeah. It's weird because Change Leader is not an emotive character, but what she does here is utterly withering.
Yeah.
In the mess hall, there's sort of a mess hall McLaughlin group.
Issue two.
Are you going to be able to find a drop of McLaughlin saying issue two for the, mess hall
Maybe.
McLaughlin group?
I'll try.
But he really didn't.
They're trying to figure out how to keep track of Odo once he's in the Golden Pond.
Oh, yeah. They want to, like, lowjack Odo so that they can get him back if they need to.
It's one of those rare scenes in Star Trek, I feel like, where every idea is shot down and there is no resolution by the end of it.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I guess Bashir and Sisko can beam down and just hang out.
And Odo is like, hey, like, don't even try because I actually want to undergo this judgment. Because I think Odo is basically saying, like, I felt like it was a righteous kill. Like, that guy that was going to, he was sneaking around on the little D trying to, like, disengage the safeties on the warp core or something, right?
Right.
So he was going to kill, like, Odo would have died, right?
Sure.
If that had worked.
Yeah.
So another moment of hypocrisy from the changeling leadership here. But yeah, so he's kind of eager to go make his case and have his day in court.
I'm making my defense justifiable homicide. What do you think?
I know this is a little bit unorthodox, but I have declined your offer of a public defender. I'm going to defend myself.
Odo turns both of his hands into gavels.
I'm like Sir Anthony Hopkins in Fracture. I've planned this all out ahead of time.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
So when they beam down, Change Leader walks into the pool. You know, there are people who jump into a pool and those who, like, walk down the stairs into a pool.
Yeah, I gotta jump in because it, you know, once it gets to my my more sensitive bits, you know, it's just too much, you know? You gotta rip the Band-Aid off. Just jump right in.
I would say I'm probably 50-50. Half the time I'm a pool walker, the other half I'm a pool jumper.
Wow, you're a crazy man.
I know, it's weird, but I was expecting Odo to follow her in with the cannonball.
Come, Odo. It's time.
Yahoo!
He's learned a lot from the solids, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. And Bashir would just, like, run and try and get some of the splash on him.
Nim, 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 nim.
He's like, Bashir's like trying to skip rocks and that shit. I thought that would have been really funny.
I thought the comedy in this episode was not good, except for that moment. The rock skipping was a good moment.
That was really good.
They're down there for an undetermined amount of time. They're warned that the trial could take a long time, and Sisko says at some point, well, we'll just wait it out. Like, I don't care.
They didn't bring, like, a tent or like, a camp stove or anything.
It's one of those environments that should be more sensory than it is, because it looks like Planet Instagram filter, and it looks like a place that would smell very exotic.
It's Planet every Instagram filter, too. Like,
yeah.
it's dark and gloomy. It's all the filters stacked on top of each other. It's a much less verdant place than the other changeling planet. Like, there's just a little outcropping of rock, and then everything as far as the eye can see is piss.
The only sense we get is sight, though. We don't even really get too much of the, like, viscous sound of a golden lake or like, a steam element or a smell for what this might be. Because I've got to imagine this lake cannot smell good. It just can't.
Like, the only thing you have to take a shower in is other changelings? Where do the changelings shit? Into each other?
What is an adjective for, like, an amoeba? Like, are they amoebic in that way?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, one of the ways we experience the passage of time is Worf catching Garak trying to Shimoda the torpedo controls in one of the Jefferies tubes. And he and Garak get in, like, a full-blown fist fight because Garak has endeavored to commit genocide.
You were trying to override the launch controls for the quantum torpedoes.
I thought it was pretty interesting that Worf came down so hard on the other side of this. He's not saying, like, well, I agree with you, I have orders not to do that. It wouldn't be surprising for Worf to take that position. What he's saying is, we're not here to start a war.
Garak, your proposal is interesting. However, I only shoot at cargo ships.
The only orb that I will obliterate completely is my brother's head.
Garak goes from 0 to 10 here so quickly. You cut from that hallway scene with Garak to this scene right after, and there's no middle ground between them. Did you need some connective tissue between the two? Because Garrick's actions come as such a surprise. I want to be clear, I love what he's doing here, and I think his reasoning for it is fairly compelling to a type of person. Like, I love the put it all on the line science fiction plan that he's got. It's the blow up the damn ship plan from First Contact.
Right.
Like, what are you willing to lose to win this war? Right. Garak asks Worf, and Worf is not willing to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to answer your question, I did not feel like I needed connective tissue. I feel like you can just do the math on where Garak was by these two scenes, and I kind of like that about it.
Yeah, I think I do too.
But he has stopped from doing the deed, and we cut back to the little rocky outcropping on the piss planet, and Odo is spat back out of the drink, a nude man.
Odo, are you all right?
He's not wearing his uniform anymore. Bashir starts tricordering him, and he's like,
Captain, I'm getting some strange readings.
He's got lungs, he's got a heart, he's got a crank that stays one size unless it's erect, in which case it's a slightly different size. But he's definitely a shower, not a grower.
He kind of flicks the side of it. He's like, check this out, Captain Sisko. Look at what it's doing here. And now here.
Who gets to determine, you know, what's okay, you know, and then what's weird?
I think we can tell the temperature of the golden pool by the size of Odo's crank after he's pulled from it. He had previously been flailing around in a style that would get the attention of a lifeguard, Ben.
Oh, sure, yeah. But neither Sisko nor Bashir jump in to try and save him. Change leader comes out and explains what has happened. They have solidified him.
Yeah, Odo's been sentenced to solidity.
And genetically, he's human, right? He's like, he's not Bajoran or Cardassian, he's human.
Yeah, because in the infirmary, Bashir says he's got type O negative blood.
Yeah.
And he is human, but his face remains Founders-like as a punishment. Ben, I've often thought that my face was a punishment for something that I did. So I think Odo's now become my favorite character.
Yeah. Did you think that was intentionally a little Sistine Chapel tableau when they beamed up from the changeling planet when Odo reaches his hand out?
I think you could make the case for that.
Kind of an interesting composition, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're back on the station. Odo gets a blood test, and Bashir is very disappointed when it doesn't go gold.
Yeah.
And then Odo has to get fitted for baby's first real clothing.
Yeah, because Garak having proposed genocide to Worf, is free to go back and work at his station job again.
Well, he's free until such time as he has fitted Odo for a uniform, but then Odo is going to take him and lock him up for 6 months.
Weird order of operations here.
Yeah. Maybe he was, like, you know, accused of the crime, but, like, released on bail while while the trial was proceeded, and now he has to, like, report to jail.
Odo can now blame his bad attitude on being hungry.
Yeah.
Because he is hungry in this scene, which eventually means he'll have to shit also.
Mm.
He's going to have a pretty interesting day.
And Bashir just leans in, and also piss.
Yeah, Arroya enters the scene to kind of soften the blow of becoming human. She is someone who offers comfort to Odo, and Odo is, I wouldn't say open to this, but open to this in a way that he wasn't in the first scene.
Yeah, she says, you know, being humanoid has its advantages. Take pleasure in your body.
Relish in your body. Odo grabs a textbook and puts it in front of his crotch.
Yeah. Walks down the promenade.
Later on, Odo's talking to Sisko about his experience, and he's getting flashbacks to his time submerged in the Golden Pond. And understandably, he said he does not want time off of work because his job was really the foundation for his whole existence, and he's got to keep doing it to feel normal. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I think Sisko is able to understand that. They're having a conversation about this when everybody runs to the TV store next to the constabulary office and is watching as every channel broadcasts Gowron making a proclamation on whatever the Federation equivalent of CNN. He is going to war to take the Arcanus system. And Odo has some tea to spill from his experience in the Great Link about what's going on. W/R/T Gowron.
Gowron, the head of the Klingon Empire, is a changeling.
It sure seems like the sort of thing that after that two-part episode on Earth, where there was changeling infiltration of the Federation president, that...
Yeah.
A little bit of knowledge sharing might have been a good idea, like even with your enemy, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. But that is that's the dun-dun-dun to summer break.
That's what the red phone is for.
Yeah, you gotta use that red phone, guys.
Yeah, we dun-dun-dun into a summer break after Deep Space Nine Season 4, and you're left to wonder, what's gonna happen in Season 5? There's this 10-day deadline that Golden Gowron has put on the table.
Yeah.
Looks like there's going to be some war.
An interesting question at the end of this episode is season 5, episode 1, 10 days from now, or is it 6 months from now?
Yeah.
Is it Garrick getting you know, released from prison and being our proxy, catching us up for 6 months of war with the Klingons, or is it the equivalent of Best of Both Worlds Part 2, where we just pick up right where we left off?
I feel like for many season finales, both of the two-part variety and of the just contiguous season-to-season variety, we've picked up right where we've left off. So it would be interesting if there were a slip in time here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very curious.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
I liked everything about this episode except its attempts at comedy, save for the stone skipping scene. Like, Kira, the show does so much work to build Kira up into a complex fighting character, but also like a strong feminine role model. Like, that's what she is.
Yeah.
And I feel like to joke her up with a bunch of sneezing while pregnant, like, it feels like she's being made fun of. And I don't like that. That's where I'm at with this. What about you?
Yeah, it kind of makes pregnancy the punchline in a weird way, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would so love to replace that stuff with more O'Brien and Keiko triangulated with Kira. Like, they just barely scratch into that.
That's such an interesting dilemma to explore, too. Like if what if Kira wants to keep doing all of the dangerous stuff and is like, yeah, like, I didn't ask for this baby to be in me, so I'm going to keep doing my job the same way I would do it whether or not I was pregnant. You know, like, that would be fascinating.
I'm fully expecting season 5 to start with Nana Visitor being not pregnant anymore, because that's how the summer break goes in a production schedule. But, like, what a missed opportunity if they were able to construct a reason for this to happen and then derive none of the conflicts from it.
Yeah.
That would be unfortunate.
Indeed, Adam. You know what's never unfortunate is the inbox of Priority One messages that we read on every episode. You want to check those out with ya boy?
Sure do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from CC. It is for Drew. The message goes like this. Drew, happy birthday to the better half of our dynamic duo. The waistcoat warrior to my arts marketing maven. The mint frosting to my cellular peptide cake. You are all kinds of awesome. May you continue to bring glory and honor to your house. Kapla!
Wow. What a lovely message.
Nicely written, Cece.
We need some arts marketing. How do we market this podcast? I guess I don't want to call this podcast art.
That's not even a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday, Drew. Sounds like you got a great partner there in Cece.
Indeed.
We have another Priority One message, Adam. Another birthday. It's from Rich, and it's to Adrian. Happy birthday, Adrian, though you'll probably hear it 420 days late. And actually, sorry, I hate interrupting Priority One messages, but I remember Adrian from our first San Francisco show. Remember her with the dreads? How are you doing, Adrian? Actually, the rest of this P1 isn't that interesting. So let's go to the next one. Well, we're done with Priority One messages for the day, Rich. And I take great umbrage at you putting words in my mouth. Great umbrage.
Wow.
But I feel like I do remember Adrian. So happy birthday, Adrian, even if this is super late.
Happy birthday, Adrian. I totally remember Adrian.
Yeah. I think our deal with San Francisco live shows is January. That's when to look for a live show in SF.
Yeah, I think so. In what is becoming one of our favorite times of year, that San Francisco Sketchfest.
Yeah. If you'd like to leave a Priority One message, you know what to do. You head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, and it is $200 for a commercial message. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I found my drunk Shimoda in that scene where Change Leader has walked into the Little D's infirmary to talk to Odo. Mm-hmm. And there are levels to emptying the room that happen here based on her relative strength as a character. Like, she's the heavy in the room.
Yeah.
And so she dismisses the humans, and then she dismisses the Jem'Hadar. And then for whatever reason, one of the security men doesn't consider him either. And he is given instructions to leave, and security man nods at Odo like he has any agency in that moment at all. And that choice by that actor was very funny to me.
Yeah.
So that was something that I noticed. Not the first weird behavior from a security person in this episode, but that was the one that I clung to.
Yeah, that one security guy, like, I'm gonna be the last guy to leave the room. I'm gonna let this Jem'Hadar go before me.
Maybe if I stay perfectly still, no one will notice.
I liked that too. My Shimoda is also in this scene. It's Dr. Bashir. Uh-huh. When Change Leader opens the door back up and she says, you can go back in, his line read on
thank you,
is like so withering.
like, oh, I really appreciate being allowed back into my six bay. That's great. Everything about that room scene, there's a lot going on there. A lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Gotta get that cold press latch.
What are we unpacking for the season premiere of season 5 of Deep Space Nine?
Season 5, episode 1 is called Apocalypse Rising. Sisko, Odo, O'Brien, and Worf enter Klingon territory on a suicide mission to expose Gowron, the Klingon leader, as a changeling. Damn.
Wow, human Odo.
Yeah, the little thumbnail of Odo for this episode is him staring into a half-drunk glass of beer. So I guess we'll also get to see what it's like when Odo gets drizunk.
I wonder how long we're going to get human Odo.
Yeah.
I hope we get to ride with him for a while.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I wonder if we're going to get drunk on this episode, Adam.
Great question. The only way we'll find out is by consulting the Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets. It's a game that you can find at gach.biz/game.
It's your role, buddy.
We are currently on square 32, where two squares ahead, we have a Measure of a Man episode. And then a few squares past that, we have a Kanar with Damar episode. That is an interesting square where each host attempts to invent a cocktail that tastes like Kanar, and the other host must try their recipe.
Yeah. Inflict a cocktail on each other.
Yeah.
A lot of homework involved with that one, because, like, you have to make it up at your house and create a reproducible recipe and then send it to the other person who has to then make it at their house.
I would be excited to land on that.
Yeah.
I have got the die in my hands.
Cool.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I'm warming it with my breath. And here we go. Ben, I have rolled a 6.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Whoa.
I don't think I've ever rolled a 6.
Blowing past both of those squares.
We have landed on square 38, which is a regular old episode.
Damn. Very exciting. Looking forward to experiencing a regular episode for season 1 of episode 5, Adam.
I began to get a little sad about, you know, how quickly it feels like we're going through Deep Space Nine, but then I remembered 26 episode season is going to take 6 months. We still have more than a year of Deep Space Nine to do.
Oh yeah, we got plenty.
So I'm not feeling bad about that at all. And, I mean, from what I've heard, this is the best of Deep Space Nine ahead. So,
yeah. You know, the future is bright.
We haven't quit on Deep Space Nine like some other podcasts have.
No, we're not quitters, Adam, and neither are our viewers. The friends of DeSoto who want to see this show go long into the future, head to MaximumFun.org/donate. And contribute to support the show on a monthly basis. It's how we make our living, and we really appreciate the folks that do it. If it's not in the budget for you right now, you got a lot of other ways to support. You can leave a nice review on your podcatching app of choice, or recommend the show to a friend or loved one.
You can flag a bad review as inappropriate.
Yeah. You could put it out on social media that you like the show. Use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. Adam's on there at Cut for Time. I'm at Benjamin AHR. And while you're there, you can check out the trading cards of Bill Tilly and the poster artwork of J.J. Lendl every week.
Do you like watching videos on YouTube?
Sure do.
If you do, you can find the Greatest Gen YouTube feed, which has all of one video at this moment. But you would also find the video stylings of Adam Ragusea. He can make a damn fine video, but he can also make the great music that you hear on the Greatest Generation family of products. Search Adam Ragusea on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, he worked off of the inspiration of Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song, our original theme song.
I like to believe that his food videos are also inspired by Dark Materia.
Yeah, I think that's plausible.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of great Greatest Gen community to be had all over the internet. If you use Facebook, there are a bunch of great Facebook groups. And I think there's a Discord. There's probably a Slack. There's a Wikia that goes in depth on all of the meanings of all of the jokes. We got a great email in our inbox the other day that asks why we call sick bay six bay and why we say W/R/T since it's longer than WRT and with regard to. If you're wondering about the answers to those questions, they're probably on the Greatest Gen Wikia.
They sure are. And we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which sounds like the title of a self-published science fiction book. Doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah.
It totally does to me.
It's 99 cents on the Apple Books app.
It's a stock photograph, like cross-dissolved over like some weird color-timed body of water and Starfield.
Yeah, or just like a bad CG rendering of a spaceship.
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.